Tell the truth.
Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the daylight savings time of free speech, because it's still daylight savings time in the U.S. I thought it was daylight savings time in Britain already, but it's not. But we still have Mark Collett here. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send badly needed fundage. Where? You may well ask. To 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it in to 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. Operators are standing by. So is Mark Collett. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. It's good to be here. We're still not quite on daylight saving time as of yet. However, we will be from this Sunday. I'm not sure which way the clocks go, but it means we either get an extra hour in bed or we get one less hour in bed. And if it's the latter, I'm sure Mrs. Mark will be very unhappy. But to me, I'm an early bird, so it makes very little difference. However, we have managed to get through the daylight savings hours at the beginning of this year, and there'll be more at the end, but we're still here no matter what. So, my friend, I would say the biggest thing to discuss since we last spoke is obviously the horrific terror attack in Russia. And considering the amount of civilians killed and the severity of the attack, the Western media have been really playing this down. I mean, here in the UK, the sort of day after the terror attack, the Western media, or, you know, the Daily Mail specifically, had this attack, which is now, I think, over 140 have been confirmed dead. On the night, over 80 were confirmed dead, and that number has slowly risen because, you know, they've discovered more bodies and more people have succumbed to their horrific wounds from this very cowardly and awful attack. But I will say, this was buried. So the news here in the UK is dominated by Princess Kate and her apparent battle against cancer. That is the big news. She had been, you know, not seen for months, and there was speculation she could be dead or all sorts of things. And now it emerges that, well, the press are saying that she's got cancer, but she still hasn't been seen. No one's heard anything of her. But I think there was no less than 8 stories about Kate which buried this terrorist attack. Now, obviously, the first thing to say is if there'd been another sort of terrorist attack or strike on Israel, I don't think the story would have been buried under anything. I think, you know, a member of the royal family could have died and that would have taken second billing. But yeah, this attack on Russia, absolutely horrific. Over 140 people dead and buried. Is it the same in America? Has this been largely buried by the mainstream media?
Well, the thing is, I don't look at the mainstream media, but I do look at RT every day. So it's certainly on RT, Russia Today, it's buried everything else. I don't know what the mainstream media is talking about here, honestly.
You see, I try to stay abreast. I know it sounds funny because we're sort of on the outside of the mainstream, but I still try to stay abreast of the mainstream conservative news every day. I like to keep abreast of that for obvious reasons, because I think I'm obviously not telling you how to do your job, but I do believe it's important that we sort of keep an eye on what the mainstream media is reporting on. So it came as sort of a pretty big thing when I saw this horrific attack, and then I saw that the sort of response to this was, you know, completely buried under news about Kate and what was going on in the royal family. And obviously, when 140 people plus are absolutely, you know, massacred in the most sort of cold-blooded and one of the most cold-blooded and horrific terrorist attacks we've seen in recent times, you've got to say, you think that would take top billing, but oh no, that hasn't taken top billing. I did see the news on RT. Now, obviously, RT is a little hard to get hold of in this country at the moment, but I did get hold of that and I saw some of it, and obviously it was going to take top billing there, and rightfully so. You'd expect this to take top billing anywhere, but it didn't in the UK. And as I said, it wasn't just buried, it wasn't just sort of second place, it was sort of the ninth article down. But it's been pretty interesting, because here in the UK, there's been a lot of talk that this attack was perpetrated by Islamists or jihadists. And to be honest, I actually don't think that's the case. And obviously, there will be, I'm sure, a number of different theories coming out over, the next few days, weeks, maybe even months. I haven't seen anyone saying, oh, it was all faked yet. There's usually somebody saying that, but I haven't seen that at the moment. But I don't think it was jihadists, and I think I've got a pretty credible reason for saying that. So have you seen any interesting takes on this yet, or any suggestions of who could be behind it?
Well, I did listen to Alexander Mercuris talk about it, and I might have fallen asleep by the time he reached his conclusion, but he was raising a lot of questions about it, which I think are similar to things that you're going to raise, that it's certainly not the textbook jihadist case. And I was listening to a lecture from, 15 years ago by an economist, and it was a long lecture series, and he was on his terrorism phase, and he was talking about some things about how carefully jihadists, how they recruit people who are going to go on the missions. This is from 15 years ago, but the pattern was already established. They're very careful about who they pick. They pick really, really motivated people. The people they pick tend to be, from higher socioeconomic backgrounds, and they don't just pick anybody off the street. So let's hear about your ideas on this. What do you think happened? Who do you think did it?
Well, the first thing that I find really interesting about this is the newspapers are saying it's jihadists or Islamists. So they don't say Muslims. They don't say Muslims. You know, they sort of draw a distinction between what they term are Muslims and Islamists. And apparently Islamist is now the sort of term for Muslim extremists. And obviously jihadists are people who wage holy war on behalf of, Islam to take the battle to the non-believer, as it were. And this is interesting because there's always a pattern with jihadists. So to understand your jihadists, you have to understand the mindset of those that would be described as Islamists. Now, Islamists are fanatical, and they obviously believe in a very, very literal translation of the Quran. And they believe that jihad, as in holy war, is the most important facet, or one of the most important facets, of their religion. And they also believe that to die in the act of jihad is the most honorable way to die. So if you die in the act of jihad, you go straight to heaven, you get the 70 virgin brides, you are elevated to the highest level of Islamic heaven. So this is why these jihadists die in the act of terrorism. So when they carry out their jihad, when they go on their killing spree, they usually carry a suicide belt, or they commit actions that lead to their deaths. So they don't go in there looking to escape. They don't go in there looking to come out the other side alive. This isn't an action of go in, kill as many people, escape, live to fight another day, rinse and repeat, and carry this out as many times as possible. And that is probably a misguided Western view of Islamic terrorism. Islamic terrorists act in a different way. They go in, they wage holy war, they die in the act of holy war or jihad, and that grants them their place in heaven. So actually dying is not failing the mission. Dying is actually part of what they do. It's actually part of their mindset. They're going there to die so they can ascend, so they can go on to heaven, so they can get their 70 virgin brides, etc., etc., etc. So the first thing you have to note about this is the guys who carried this out fled. All of them have been captured alive now. So that would suggest this is definitely not an Islamist attack. This was not jihad, because these guys have been captured. These were not ideological Muslims. These were not Islamists. These were people who, by their own admission, and they have been tortured. They have been, you know, I don't know if you've seen the videos, but they have been, you know, tortured quite a bit in order to spill the beans on where the other guys went, who paid them, etc., so they could all be rounded up and captured quickly. And these guys have all admitted that they were paid, and they were paid half in advance and were to be paid half on completion of the mission. Now, this is
not a very large sum either.
It's not a very large sum either. Now, this is the other thing. Somebody who is a jihadist, somebody who is committing an act of jihad, is doing that on the basis that they fundamentally are wanting to go to heaven. They're not doing it for financial gain. Financial gain is not on, you know, the jihadist tick list. They're not doing it for money. They're doing it because they want to advance their cause, and primarily on a personal level, advancing their cause means going to heaven. So that means, you know, dying in the act of jihad, which is, you know, interesting. But these guys have all said that fundamentally this was about the money. This was about not about getting to heaven. They were paid a small amount of money, and they were doing their best to escape so they could get somewhere safe and receive the rest of their payment, which again is very strange, and it suggests, you know, another party was involved. Now, ISIS have been quick to claim this, but I don't believe that it actually was ISIS. I don't believe it was ISIS. ISIS are now extremely depleted in their ability to carry out actions, military or terrorist or otherwise, and they do just claim things. And they've done this in the UK. They've claimed several stabbings and other sort of more minor, still terrorist, but more minor events compared to this. And they've done that, I believe, because they are trying fundamentally to remain relevant when really they don't have the kind of relevance that they enjoyed a few years ago. And obviously when they had an effective caliphate over most of Iraq before they were broken by airstrikes, they were extremely relevant, and they probably had the ability to carry out terror attacks, you know, in Europe, in Russia, you know, in other Middle Eastern nations. But they absolutely do not have that now. And that's not really controversial to say. It's true. But when terrorist organizations become depleted, become unable to carry out terrorist acts, they still claim anything as their own in order to put on a brave face. So I don't think that the ISIS claim that this was ISIS is really credible. And these guys certainly didn't behave like jihadists. And their primary motivation in this, you know, according to them all, and, you know, they were tortured. There is, you know, a lot of footage on Telegram of them being tortured. One of them had his ear cut off and it was fed to him. Another one was stripped from the waist down and actually had electrodes attached to his genitals until he was literally lying there foaming at the mouth. So these guys, you know, have obviously been forced to say what they were up to, who were their co-conspirators, etc., etc. Now, I just want to, before it goes back to you, Patrick, I actually don't believe that torture is a good method of dealing with prisoners. And I think it's pretty abhorrent in most cases. However, this is one of the few cases where I would say that torture is not beyond the realms of acceptability. And the reason being, you know, if you have terrorists and they've been on a rampage and they're getting away and they might have valuable information, or there might be bombs somewhere else, or they might be going on to commit another act, or there might be another terrorist cell just about to act that's connected to them. If then they are tortured in an emergency situation in order to stop more innocent lives being lost, I think that's one of the few reasons why you might find torture acceptable. But for the main part, I would find it abhorrent. But in an extremely unusual case like this, and harrowing case like this, I would say it was more acceptable.
Well, just regarding torture, certainly in the first quarter century of the 21st century, when the United States was using torture, when people are being tortured, what they try to say is whatever's going to make the torture stop, regardless of whether it's truth or not. And in the case of the United States torturing people at Abu Ghraib or whatever, they weren't after the truth. They were just after justification for America's actions. So it certainly didn't help the United States to have its army and its CIA engaged in torture, because they weren't seeking the truth. They were simply seeking justification for what they were doing.
Well, I'll say this, Patrick. There's a lot. There's a huge gulf, a large difference between standing somebody on a box and pointing at their genitals and laughing, as you know, the pictures leaked suggested was going on in Abu Ghraib prison, and you know, having your ear cut off and fed to you. You know, there's a
ear cut off and fed to you is pretty hardcore.
Yeah, and you know, again, that is something that is pretty much a much higher level of torture. But I do think in this case, this is one of those few cases where something like that would be warranted. And you know, it sounds gruesome to say that, but I think it is. And I don't believe that this should be used, obviously, in normal trials or anything like that. But I do think in something like this, in a case like this, this is one of those few cases where you would say these guys absolutely did deserve it, and it was warranted to ensure there wasn't going to be more loss of life. Now, as they all went their separate ways, so this looked like a professional operation. These looked, obviously, they were paid. They looked like mercenaries. They seemed to carry out their actions in a very controlled manner. They didn't look like they were amateurs. So they looked like they were paid mercenaries, and they all went in separate ways. So afterwards,
I thought they all got caught in the same card. Is that not the case?
I don't know, because when you saw them, they were all separated. And as they were all separated, they were tortured separately, and they pretty much gave exactly the same story. So I do know what you mean, that torture isn't necessarily the best way to get information out of people, because people just say what they think the torturer wants to hear to make it stop. However, these guys did all give the same story, which again is quite an interesting fact. However, that also points to the fact that these guys, you know, are telling the truth, and they're definitely not jihadists. They are people that are primarily motivated by money. They may have had some military training. They seem to know what they were doing. And also, they were mercenaries. They were mercenaries who were recruited, from Islamic countries, obviously. I believe they are actually Muslims, but they're obviously not Islamists.
I think they're from Tajikistan, which was a Central Asian country, formerly part of the Soviet Union. The Tajiks, for what it's worth, they speak a language that's related to Persian, whereas most of the Central Asians speak a language related to Turkish. I'm not sure about these individuals, but I believe were from Tajikistan. It's on the border with China.
Yeah, you are correct. That's where they're from. I couldn't actually remember the exact pronunciation of it, so I left that one to you.
Well done. That's the type of thing I would know.
Health Simple with Colorado Shilajit, fact bit number 2. In Ayurvedic pharmacology, Shilajit is the king, Raja Yoga Vahayana. Raja Yana is one of the comprehensive disciplines of Ayurveda. It comprises of specialized uses of herbal minerals to achieve the optimum state of health. Raja Yana is a path to achieve homeostasis and thus retarding the process of aging and the prevention of diseases. Shilajit stands alone as the king herbal mineral over all other earth-made substances. Within Raja Yana, Shilajit is the ultimate substance that improves quality of plasma and blood. Thus, it strengthens and promotes health to all tissues of the body. Legit Shilajit, like Colorado Shilajit, is as the literal Sanskrit translation implies. Shilajit is the conqueror of mountains and the destroyer of weakness.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
Do you begin to smell some funky little things going on? Let me share this story with you. It's not so much a story, it's something I wrote years ago. Read your history, people. Stock markets collapse on Friday. Bank seizures, closures, holidays take place after business hours on Friday. Do currencies or governments also collapse on Friday? Tomorrow's Friday. Will the end come on this Friday, or will the inevitable collapse hold off for a while? The next round of the worst financial crisis in 100 years is coming, people, and the government is out to make you and I pay for it. And will your savings survive a global banking wipeout? What happens when the U.S. sees hyperinflation? What if taxes soar not only for the rich? Can you survive the stock market tanks? Look, between a stock market wipeout, waves of bank failures, soaring government spending that will lead to hyperinflation, and the destruction of the dollar's value, isn't it time that you prepare for the uncertainty which lies ahead? Protect your money now or forever kiss it goodbye. My friends, I offer you over 6 decades experience of hard asset ownership and knowledge, and I'm prepared to handle the smallest detail in the balanced protection of your portfolio. For as the future of uncertainty continues to blanket this nation of ours, I believe that I can offer you the privacy, safety, security, and possibly some profitability which you deserve. And so I invite you to visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com for further information regarding protecting your wealth. Or call me, Jeffrey Bennett, at 602-799-8214. Or by email at KettleMoraineLTD@Cox.net for private consultation. Once again, our phone number, 602-799-8214. It's almost Friday.
Yeah, you are correct. That's where they're from. I couldn't actually remember the exact pronunciation of it, so I left that one to you.
Well done. That's the type of thing I would know. Well, okay. So then the question is, if ISIS didn't recruit them and put them up to it, who did?
Well, I think the first thing is to suggest it was the United States. Now, I don't believe for a minute it was the United States, and I'll tell you why. The United States actually warned Russia, apparently, that they believed there was going to be some kind of terror attack and to up their security, which they don't seem to have done. Now, a few people have said, apparently, this suggests that Russia were in on it, that they didn't up security. Now, I need to say this to people who live in Europe, because or Western Europe, it's quite interesting. So I've been to France, I've been to Germany, I've been to Brussels several times. And when you go to these countries, much like you would observe in our capital city in London, you will see a lot of armed police, and you'll see a lot of people, always on high alert for potential terrorist attacks. However, I've also been to Prague, and I've also been to Riga, and Prague and Riga were not full of armed police. They were not full of people preparing for a terrorist attack. When I went to Brussels, the last time I went to Brussels, it wasn't just armed police. The streets had military blockades. So that's the kind of situation. I don't know if that's still the case, but that was the kind of situation that Western Europeans were living under. So when Western Europeans say, oh, well, where were all the security? Where were all the armed police in Russia? Well, maybe Russia is more like Eastern Europe. Maybe they don't experience these things as often, or maybe they have, you know, a more homogenous population, and these things are not a constant and ever-present threat. So that's obviously sort of a bit of an explanation for this. And it's obviously, though, people who were not in the know have suggested that this was the working of Vladimir Putin. Now, I absolutely don't think it was the working of Vladimir Putin, and I'll explain why. Putin has just won an election by what, you know, in very mild terms would be called an absolute landslide. Now, when you win an election with 87%, you do not need a false flag event to, increase your support. You just don't. I think that's a pretty obvious fact. You know, if this had happened just before the election and Vladimir Putin then, you know, came out and, you know, stated that he was obviously going to take the harshest possible actions against the perpetrators and, you know, gave a strongman speech, I think that would be something that would point maybe towards the fact it could have been a false flag. But I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's the case at all. And I think that people suggesting that are probably a little bit naive to the way these things work. What's more, if it was a false flag, I think that the Russian security services would have allowed... would have allowed these perpetrators to get to the Ukraine. And once they'd have got to the Ukraine, that would have been a real sort of opportunity for Vladimir Putin to say, hey, you know, these guys are in the Ukraine, Ukrainians, you need to hand them over. And if the Ukrainians had refused to hand them over, that would have been the justification for greater and more sustained and more destructive military strikes, maybe even on Kiev. And there's nothing the US could have done about that, because obviously after 9/11, the US demanded that Osama bin Laden was handed over by Afghanistan. And when the Afghans refused, the US were like, well, we're going to invade. So the US could hardly say to Russia, well, we're not going to allow you to go any further into the Ukraine on the basis that they are harboring people who carried out a mass terrorist attack in Moscow, because it wouldn't make any sense and it would be an obvious hypocrisy that I think nearly everyone would have picked up on. So I definitely don't think it's Vladimir Putin either. I don't think it's America. I don't think it's Putin. And I don't think it's the jihadists, which leaves us in a really interesting situation where I don't think there's an actual clear perpetrator. But I do believe the people behind this are likely to be another government. And I wouldn't be surprised if it didn't have something to do with Mossad. And the reason I wouldn't be surprised if it didn't have something to do with Mossad is because Putin at the moment, along, or the Russians at the moment, along with China, are forming greater alliances with Islamic countries in the Middle East, which is something that Israel doesn't like. And carrying out an Islamist terrorist attack, or a terrorist attack that appears to be perpetrated by Islamists on Russian soil, would be something that might create divisions there. It might create difficulties. It might create some forms of animosity amongst the BRICS nations, who might react to any future work with Islamic nations in the Middle East as potentially being problematic. I don't know, but I certainly don't think it was America or Russia. I don't think this was a false flag. I don't think it's the work of the CIA. I think this could potentially be the work of Mossad. I don't know what your opinion is on all that.
True. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure and natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
Potentially being problematic. I don't know, but I certainly don't think it was America or Russia. I don't think this was a false flag. I don't think it's the work of the CIA. I think this could potentially be the work of Mossad. I don't know what your opinion is on all that.
Right. So I don't know, but looking at Israel and cui bono, what's good for Israel or what's good for any other party? So Israel, the current Israeli government, has bitten off way more than it can chew. It's the current Israeli government seems to have known that there was going to be the October 7th attack, and of course was probably not quite prepared for how well organized it was and everything. But the current Israeli government, during that attack, I think it's pretty non-controversial that they wound up killing a lot of their own people, either through just kind of freaking out, or very likely through this Hannibal directive, where in order to prevent their people from being used as hostages, they kill them. At any rate, since October 7th, the Israelis have been prepared to do pretty much anything. There's been a little bit of restraint put on them by the United States. They have so far not invaded Rafah crossing or the Rafah area in the far south. They were talking about doing a land operation there. They've been talking about that for weeks, and it hasn't happened yet. There's a little bit of restraint put on them by Egypt, which is refusing to accept huge numbers of Palestinian refugees up until this point. But the Israelis are they're engaged in very, very extreme actions, actions that have killed at least 32,000 Palestinians and likely a whole lot more that haven't been found or counted yet. And what I've been saying about the Israelis is that, you know, these are things they cannot succeed in their stated goal. Their stated goal is the eradication of Hamas, and they're killing random people, and that's not going to eradicate Hamas. And their likely preferred goal, you know, as opposed to their stated goal, is to ethnically cleanse Gaza, get rid of the Gazan, the people who live there, have them go to other countries, and just seize that territory for themselves. That's also not likely to happen. It doesn't seem to be in the cards. And so they're in kind of desperation mode. And my prediction for Israel has been that that eventually there is going, probably sometime this year, there's going to be an international peace conference, that the peace conference will be dominated by Russia and China, and it will impose a settlement on Israel. It's not as if Israel is going to be able to string out negotiations endlessly like it's always been able to and get what it wants by never reaching a settlement. The settlement's going to be imposed on them. The settlement will be very harsh to them. They will lose all the occupied territories. I think that's what's in the cards for Israel. And if Netanyahu were to think that that's what's in the cards for Israel, and if he could do something that would change the attitude of Russia and Vladimir Putin towards Israel, to make them see Israel as being an ally, then why not? And here's one article, before I kick it back to you, I saw this was written by some I saw it through, like, I pulled up my browser, my Microsoft browser, and it just automatically shows these news stories. And this is from some Jewish source. I don't know if it was Times of Israel or just a mainstream American source that was still very Jewish. And the headline was, Vladimir Putin must now realize he's been fighting the wrong war. And I didn't read to the bottom of the article, but the idea is that his problem was never with the West and Ukraine. His problem has always been with, it should have been with ISIS and Muslims. When he came to power, he had a Muslim extremist problem, and he still does. He's been fighting the wrong war. And, you know, that would, I'm not saying the people who wrote this article were in on it, but that's the psychology that Netanyahu, if the Israelis were behind this, that is the psychology that he would be looking for, to try to get Vladimir Putin, and hopefully the Chinese as well, focused on the Islamic threat, so that Israel could be seen as a potential ally. Because that's what Israel sells itself. It bills itself as being, you know, the front line against Islamic extremism. If Israel didn't exist, the West would have to invent it. Whereas, you know, Zionism's is not about that. I'll kick it back to you, Mark.
I fundamentally agree with what you're saying, and I think it's an interesting point. And the reason I think it's an interesting point is because I've heard this too many, many, many times, that, you know, Israel is the front line in the fight against Islam, that if it wasn't for Israel in the Middle East, Israel's like this, you know, defensive outpost, you know, that's so close to enemy lines And that defensive outpost draws so much of the Islamic world's ire that it prevents them from assaulting Europe. Now, I think this is rubbish. You know, I think it's a load of nonsense. And I've also heard this sort of rubbish that fundamentally you hear this from supporters of the State of Israel as well, where they say, you know, if we didn't have Israel, we wouldn't have any friends in the Middle East. Well, we didn't have any enemies in the Middle East until Israel existed. You know, Israel has been the country that has essentially made the Middle East hate the West and, you know, embroiled the West in multiple wars in the Middle East that have been extremely costly and destructive. So I don't think that Israel's existence is a net positive for the West at all. And Israel's policy of, you know, antagonizing countries in the Middle East. And, you know, obviously Israel did, you know, has had a role in setting up ISIS as well. So, you know, I don't think that, and there's lots of things to say, you know, lots of evidence to suggest that, you know, we know that ISIS apologized to Israel when they accidentally struck Israel during you know, an exchange, and that's quite interesting that they would apologize for this, because we're always told that, you know, if there's any nation in the world that these Muslims hate the most, it's Israel. Yet you have ISIS apologizing to Israel when they accidentally strike one of their units or one of their defensive lines. So yeah, I believe fundamentally that the situation that we face here in Russia is probably one that has been contrived by Israel. I'm not saying it was definitely Israel, because I can't prove that. However, the only nation that really had anything to gain by this is Israel. There hasn't been any credible evidence supplied that would suggest that this attack was actually carried out by jihadists or Islamists. And I don't believe it was America. I also don't believe it was the Ukraine. And I've noticed, I think the Ukraine, if they did something like this, it would absolutely damage their cause. And I think if the Ukraine did do so, if a unit of Ukrainians did something as crazy as this, I think it would be pretty evident who they were. These guys weren't from the Ukraine. I mean, is it possible that, you know, part of the power structure in the Ukraine paid these guys? Maybe. I mean, that is credible. You know, could a rogue unit, sort of maybe Azov, have paid these guys to do something like this? Maybe. You know, the asking price wasn't particularly high. But the only real blowback from that wouldn't be to change Russia's course. It would be to ensure that Russia doubled down on their course of action and, you know, potentially increased their attacks on the Ukraine and widened the number of targets. So it wouldn't be a very wise battle plan. So from my position, the only two, or the two sort of factions which are most likely to have been behind this, are either Israel or a rogue faction within the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. The people who were caught, they were caught in a car going towards the Ukrainian border. And one would think that the Ukrainian border is probably, during these 2 years, this 2 year period of since the war started, probably pretty well guarded, right? And then in particular, after such an attack, it would be even that much more guarded. You wonder, and these people who have been caught, I believe that they, what were they being paid, like half a million rubles, which is like $5,000?
I think they had $5,000 in advance and were to get another $5,000 upon successful completion. So they were to each get $10,000, which really, in the grand scheme of things, is a very, very small amount of money for what they were being asked to do. This isn't sort of like, you know, £25 million each in Bitcoin, and they'd each been given $12.5 million, and, you know, if they'd have pulled it off and successfully fled to, say, somewhere like South America or Pakistan or somewhere like that, they would literally be living like kings for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if they tried to flee to somewhere like South America after carrying out the attack, you know, $10,000, you know, you might have had, you know, 15% of that money, maybe more, eaten up in airfares if you were trying to actually escape to a different part of the world. It's not a lot of money for what they were being asked to do.
It's not at all. And when were these people recruited? Because I was under the impression that it was fairly recently.
Yeah, apparently it was a very recent action, and this wasn't something that had been planned for a long time. And obviously, I mean, there's always on the other hand, there's always the idea that these guys could have been from a very impoverished part of the world, and £10,000 each seems like a lot of money. But I just don't believe that to be the case with this, and I don't believe anybody would, you know, would consider this. It seems very odd, is what I'm saying. It seems like a very, very small amount of money.
Right. And the course I was listening to, believe it was, who's the guy's name? Hold on a second. Timothy Taylor is an economist. And this is something that was recorded, like I say, something like maybe 10 years ago. And he had this 45-minute lecture on the economics of terrorism, and talking about the jihadists in particular. These are people who are very, very carefully, like, and, you know, he was able to, was he talking specifically about ISIS? I don't know. Maybe he was talking more about Al-Qaeda and some of the other groups, but the pattern is to recruit these people and train them for a long period of time. And over the period of time you're training them, you're also indoctrinating them and ingratiating yourself to them and making them believe all the more in their otherworldly rewards. So it just is very, very not atypical. Whereas if you are the Mossad, well, and like I say, I don't pretend to know who did this. I don't pretend to develop my own theory on this. I'm just kind of riffing on what you and Alexander Mercuris have been talking about.
What was his take? Who did he point the finger at, if anybody?
He didn't. And he's very careful, but he was doing this during one of his 1 hour episodes, and I sometimes fall asleep while I'm listening to that. So I don't really remember what he concluded, but he was saying it was very atypical, the amount of money the people don't do this for money. While on the one hand, you know, it was well planned, but the people who were involved in carrying it out had only just been recruited recently, been recruited online or something, like through some chat group. So it is very atypical. That was his takeaway, was that it's just not typical. And so I don't remember what his conclusion was, honestly, but I think both you and Alexander Mercuris, and then this guy who wasn't talking about the specific incidents, is Timothy Taylor, professor, but who was talking about the typical Islamic terrorism, it certainly does not fit the mold. It doesn't seem to fit the mold. So
I think there's a little bit more to this as well, and this is also quite interesting. This isn't the first time horrible things have happened in Russia. But in this case, I think it is clear to see just how much the West do despise Russia and the Russians, because there's been very little outpouring of support in the mainstream media, if any. And I saw today it was quite interesting. The Daily Mail referred to the torture of these terrorists as barbaric, which is quite interesting, really, when you think about the wording being used, barbaric. Now, obviously, cutting somebody's ear off and feeding it to them is something you might say is barbaric. But on the other hand, these men have committed some, you know, horrendous.
Admitted to it, supposedly, right? I mean, well, I mean, I guess if you admit to something under torture, that then maybe that's not doesn't carry the same weight.
Well, look, they've admitted to some horrendous acts, and yes, they have been brutalized. But I can actually see the reason. As I said earlier, I believe this is one of the true exceptions.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. After taking Extendivite for about 6 months, I've noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from the carpal tunnel syndrome. I will continue to buy product. This formula is very powerful. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure is stabilized, my lower edema has reduced, and lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new Ease-Off Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The Ease-Off lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the Ease-Off? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my Ease-Off?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. Ease-Off LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Doesn't carry the same weight.
Well, look, they've admitted to some horrendous acts. And yes, they have been brutalized, but I can actually see the reason. As I said earlier, I believe this is one of the true exceptions. There are very few exceptions, but this is one of the few true exceptions to that rule. But the interesting thing is here, the only people who've actually been harmed by the Russians are the terrorists themselves at this point, and they have been tortured, and that is obviously something that people may or may not agree with. But it's interesting to see the West condemning this as if it's this true crime against humanity, it's barbarism, etc., etc., etc. But the same Western outlets have been applauding Israel's bombing of women and children as a response to the Hamas attacks on October the 7th. Now, I think if Israel had captured the Hamas attackers and tortured them, you know, no one would have called that barbaric. But the fact that no one's called this wider response that has left tens of thousands of women and children dead as barbaric, and it's being applauded, says a lot about the Western media's mindset that more or less anything Russia does is wrong, and anything that Israel does is, you know, correct and something that should be absolutely cheered on.
May I just say, it may be because the Jews are friendly and they've come over here and they run our societies for us, so we have more time for porn and fentanyl.
Certainly have plenty of time for that, unfortunately. But I do think this is, a very telling side to the Western press, because I would say that most normal people would actually agree in this case that these terrorists, I mean, they haven't been killed, they have been tortured. I'd say that most people would suggest the death penalty for them, and most people would say that there was a reasonable response to the horrific acts they carried out. However, equally, I think most people now, you know, if you polled them, would say the treatment of women and children, specifically refugees in Gaza or trying to flee Gaza, has been absolutely disproportionate and 100% something that has sickened most people to the core. But again, we're in a situation today where anything that Israel does is correct, anything Russia does is incorrect. But I do think it shines light on this absolute hypocrisy that we see within the Western media.
Okay, so we're out of time. Is there anything with your shows this upcoming week that you want our audience to know about?
Yeah, I've got Warren Baylog on Wednesday night, and I've got some great shows that people can check out. I had Raging Dissident on last week. I've got a video out about how now the government of the of Great Britain, all the highest seats of state in Great Britain, all now occupied by men who are of migrant descent. I've called this totally diverse, because obviously diversity means fewer white people and totally diverse means no white people. So there's a couple of interesting videos to check out on my BitChute, my Rumble and my Odyssey. So please do that if you can. All support is greatly appreciated.
Okay, thank you very much. And I'll be back again tomorrow with actually Don Advo of Stormfront. And that is a very exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.